Hi, and welcome to the Japan Baseball Weekly Podcast. To cap Super Bowl week, it's brought to you by One World Sports. I'm John Gibson, and joining me in cyberspace is Jim Allen. What's happening, buddy? How you doing?
I am doing very well, getting ready for the Olympics.
Well, yeah, I guess I'm thinking about the Olympics, but, you know, the Super Bowl is coming up first. And
Super Bowl you speak of, Spartacus?
And all the commercials that go with it. So I get to watch all the game parts, and then I sit down with Wifey and watch all the commercials later on after the game. So,
well, I'll enjoy it. I'll be pulling for the Seahawks.
I'll be pulling for the Broncos.
Oh, cool. Well, I mean, I have no animosity. Anyway, moving on to the sport that our listeners are tuning in for.
Yes, baseball, especially in Japan. Okay. Yeah, and camp, I'm going to call it winter camp. It's up and going by the time we post this. It starts tomorrow. We're taping on a Friday, which is probably the first time I think we've ever. Well, maybe we've taped once before in our 3+ years, but
I'm not going into those logs, man.
Yeah, I remember. So it's weird to be taping on a Friday. Camp starts on Saturday, and it'll be up and going by the time we talk about, well, you guys start listening to this on Monday. But our special guest this week is former SoftBank hurler CJ Nitkowski of MLB.com. And we're going to discuss Ma Kun going to the Yankees and Coco Ballantyne. We've got a bunch of great topics. Let's get started.
Clearing the bases!
All right, so a lot has happened since our last show. Ma Kun went to the Yankees. I'm kind of conflicted about that. I'm not really sure how to...
That's because you are conflicted, period.
Yeah, I have a lot of conflict going on constantly. There's conflict in my life.
Teams. John's got this love-hate relationship with sports. He loves sports and he hates some teams.
I hate a lot of teams. But here's the thing. The Yankees already have Kuroda, so we were going to get enough Yankee games on the TV, on NHK anyway, so I wasn't anticipating a Yankee thing. I was actually hoping that Seattle would sneak in there somehow and say, you know, we've got an everyday player in Cano. We need one more arm to actually compete for a championship. We don't want to just get fans in the seats. We want to compete. And I was hoping they'd sneak in there and do something if it wasn't going to be the Dodgers, and it just happened to be the Yankees. So, I mean, sure, I don't know if I can root for him to win all the time, but I can root for him to pitch well, and, you know, he's only going to work once every 5 days or so. So I still think the Yankees need more than just the one arm to actually compete in that division. So I'm not worried about them winning the division or the championship.
John worries about the Yankees.
Yeah, I'm going to worry now. Yeah, I'm going to start the worry.
I love it. So, wow, it's like we'll make a movie about John.
I'd watch that.
Well, good. If I do it on a budget of nothing, I can make money.
Of course, Coco Ballantyne returned to Japan. He paid his bail, $50,000 for the bail, and he doesn't have to be in Florida for the court proceedings. So he's granted permission to travel for work. So he's here. He's made it to camp on time. He'll be there when it opens up tomorrow. He's already in Okinawa. You know, a lot has been going on. Why don't you talk about our chat that we had with CJ Nitkowski first?
Well, first of all, I guess, you know, you've already spoiled our surprise. You know, our guest this week needs very little introduction. I guess about the only thing CJ needs, the passport. I mean, I don't mean...
I'm sure it's ready.
I don't mean to say this in a mean way, but, you know, if you look up the expression journeyman in an encyclopedia, you might see a picture of CJ Nitkowski, you know, one of those little kid encyclopedias explaining people's professions. Mm-hmm. He played with 9 different major league teams before coming to the SoftBank Hawks in 2007 and 2008, where he was a reliever. And the first thing that caught me about CJ was the fact that he was blogging and he was tweeting. Mm-hmm. I never even heard of tweeting before I heard Hawks pitcher tweeting. I'm going, wow, what is that?
Right.
So anyway.
This is way back in 2007, right?
Yeah, he was here in 2007 and 2008 before he went on to have another career in Korea, which sounds kind of cool. I'm going to skip the jokes. But in Japan, he was not very effective. He did pitch a lot. He saved, I can't remember how many games. I'm going to guess he recorded 19 holds. He did get 2 saves, but he walked like a batter every 2 innings.
Mm-hmm.
And he struck out about the same number. He might have, in fact, he struck out a little bit more than he walked. But he had some fairly ugly ERAs, which will earn you a ticket to Korea if you can still, you know, throw strikes.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, now he's with MLB.com, and I've noticed him being here and there and everywhere. And every time I read his stuff, I'm really intrigued by the insight he brings and the language in which he uses it.
Mm.
He has a way of slowing down the process and simplifying things that I really admire. And I think he's really found something that another thing that he excels at besides being a professional athlete. So anyway, we had a chance to talk with CJ. We talked about a number of things related to Japan and baseball and fine dining. Okay. Kidding about the fine dining, but let's have a listen. Okay, well, CJ, it's great to talk to you again, and tell you, I've been enjoying reading your stuff on MLB.com and here and there, and I have to ask, what points do you find or commonalities do you find between pitching and communicating?
Well, I mean, it's hugely important. I think, you know, communication really in any area of your life is important, but certainly when you're pitching, you know, there's so many different things going on sometimes that people don't realize, outside of just putting signs down and agreeing, you know, it's not just a kind of a yes and a no. When you're putting signs down, there's a lot that goes on pregame. There's pitchers meetings. We did it both in Japan and obviously in the States as well, where you're sitting down, going through hitters, sitting down with your pitching coach, sometimes your manager, your catcher, your other pitchers, and guys are talking about things that they had seen in the past, you know, scouting reports, spray charts. You know, you're studying all that stuff and you're communicating with your coaches and making sure that information is getting relayed efficiently and properly in a way that you can use it and incorporate it into your game plan. So I think that's probably a big area. And then, of course, during the game, again, not just with your catcher, but also sometimes with your middle infielders, if you're trying to work pickoff plays or they want to know how you're maybe going to work a guy because that's how they'll set up defensively. Mm-hmm. So that's a little bit part of it. Same thing with your first baseman. Bunt plays are really big. There's times where you have to be able to communicate, not just verbally, which obviously is going to happen once the ball is down, people calling each other off or your catcher telling you which base he wants you to throw the ball to.
Mm-hmm.
That was always kind of a fun thing. It was a pretty easy transition, for me going over to Japan doing that, for the most part, but there's some stumbling blocks there, but there's a lot of little things that go on over the course of the game, where communication becomes very important.
Well, did you at some point in your career, say to a coach or say to a teammate, it's like we're not communicating. You know, what we have here is a failure to communicate.
Every once in a while, a message, especially now for me playing in Asia, where a message would come across and it almost didn't sound right. But I think more often than not, it was more about a cultural difference.
Mm-hmm.
The communication was clear. It just almost didn't make sense sometimes. You're so used to things a certain way. You know, for me, I guess I played about 10 or 11 years in the States before I'd come to Asia. And so, when that happens, something is said and you're like, well, that's not how I've, you know, done things in the past, or I've never heard that before. You know, you have to sometimes double check with your translator. Is that what he said? Is that what he meant by that? And it doesn't really make a ton of sense. And so there's some more follow up communication after that. But, you know, for the most part, you figure it out. You get it done. It's still the same game
right,
when it's all said and done. And the goal is still the same. Sometimes the way we get there is a little bit different.
Okay. Well, now you've made the transition into professional communication. And, how easy, I should say, what did you take from your background in sports and in pitching and communicating with your teammates to communicating with an audience that you can't reach out and, you know, get verbal or visual feedback from?
Yeah, you know, for me, as far as my writing has gone and now some of the on-camera work that I've done, I just really try to stay focused on, even though the person is not there, mm-hmm. that they are there, that the reader or the viewer is in the room with me and we're having a conversation. And I think the reason that I've been able to make the adjustment is because I've always kept that in mind at some point and try to make it comfortable. Now, you know, I guess you guys would know just as well, you're not going to be everything to every audience, you know, so I think my audience may be more of the guy that, you know, or gal that enjoys watching the game in the living room, drinking a beer or at the game, you know, kind of in a more of a relaxed atmosphere. You think of a guy like Doug Glanville, who's really bright, you know, writes for New York Times. I think he probably has a different audience, maybe a little bit smarter, an audience higher educated, you know, because he's, the guy is really bright, and I think he can speak to that kind of audience. I think my audience is a little bit more casual, a little bit more conversational. That's the way I try to do it. And so I try to make it seem, it can be difficult at times when you're staring into a camera.
Right.
And there's not another person there, but you try to make it like, you know, as comfortable as possible and inviting them into the conversation. I try never to talk to at people, you know, I want to talk with them. Okay. And so when I'm writing, I try to make it like that and leave it open for, you know, my opinion is not the only right one. Here's what I think. There's other possibilities, and I don't ever want to make people feel dumb for maybe disagreeing or having a different opinion.
All right. Well, this is John here talking. Now, I wanted to talk about your time in Japan a little bit. You pitched with SoftBank, and it seems like they always come up with some really good arms, or they're really good at developing their young pitchers. Do they have some special plan for pitcher development down there?
I don't know if it was anything different. I mean, for me, all of what I saw in Japan was different, so I don't know if the Hawks were different than other teams. I only played for the one team in Japan, so I didn't get a chance to necessarily compare them to other Japanese teams. But as far as what I saw from the difference between SoftBank and the American teams, and MLB teams that I played for was, I think, probably very typical Japanese, which was a lot of work, a lot of throwing, a lot of conditioning, and something that sometimes I thought was counterproductive. But you're right. I mean, they've had really good arms come through the system. I've always thought there was a lot of guys there that could have pitched in the major leagues, and we just never got to see it happen, whether it was injuries or the heavy workload ultimately caught up with them. I think Kazumi Saito is a really good example of a guy that, you know, really kind of a sad story for me of a guy that I thought in the prime of his career would have had an opportunity maybe to be an Iwakuma type of pitcher here in the United States. And it's really unfortunate because I think it's something he's probably always wanted to do. But I think the workload eventually caught up with him.
Right.
I don't remember whatever happened to Mahara. I thought he was a guy that could have came over and pitched. I haven't really followed him that closely. But when I was there, you know, he dominated as our closer. And I said, here's another guy with a good arm that I thought could come over. So they had the arms. But why they weren't able to ultimately sustain what they were doing is something that I never really got to know. Eric Hockey was another guy, and a great arm. He had a big league arm for me.
Yeah.
He could absolutely have been a middle to the bottom rotation starter in the major leagues. I know he had command issues at times, but his arm was, you know, unbelievably live with really good movement, which you don't see a lot of over there.
Right.
And so they've had the arms. They definitely have had them. They know how to get them to the point where they can be successful in MPB. I thought they actually had more guys that could have come over here and been successful as well.
Yeah, I agree. Now, were there some guys, particularly over here, but even in the States, who had a lot of talent? They surprised you with the results, though, more so than what your eyes told you?
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. For some Japanese guys that came over here, I think Aoki was a guy that I liked a lot when I was there. I thought, you know, I've told people kind of Ichiro light. I mean, which is a tough comparison to put on him because, you know, in his prime, not necessarily that good, but I thought he wasn't terribly far off either. I thought similar kind of player to some degree.
Right.
And then toward the end of his Japanese career, it looked like the numbers were starting to come down a little bit. It looked like he was starting to regress. And when he'd come to Milwaukee, I said, I don't know. I said, I don't think he's the same guy. I said, if he was here a couple of years ago, I think he'd be a really good impact player. Well, he comes over here for nothing. I mean, you saw the posting fee, which will tell you what American scouts thought of him at the time.
Right.
And he's done outstanding here. So it's been great. I mean, it's been great. I love seeing it. Because I love seeing the guys come over and do well. I think it's great for MPB. I love the exposure that they get, not only for themselves, but really for the entire league and for the country. And so it's been really good to see him do well. So there was a guy that I thought with my eyes was not going to be as good over here. I thought maybe more bottom of the order type of hitter, fourth outfielder. And he's really done an outstanding job. So I thought that's been really good. On the flip side of that, I thought Nishioka would have been better than he was. I was really surprised when he got to Minnesota. Some of the things that we were hearing, you know, I knew he was good defensively. I knew he wasn't going to win a batting title in Major League Baseball, but I thought for sure he could at least hold down a job and be a significant player. Now, I know he said he really didn't like the organization and it wasn't a good fit for him. But they seemed really disappointed in his defense. And which I was surprised because I thought, okay, that at least will be a strength of his. But they felt like he was out of position often. Didn't know where to be on cutoffs and had a really hard time adjusting. And I was shocked to hear that. I thought at least he would be, you know, if he wasn't a starter. I thought the money was definitely too high for him. But I thought if he wasn't going to be a starter, for sure he's a good utility guy that you could move around, you know, and maybe start once or twice a week.
Right.
And so surprised to see him really struggle.
Well, don't get me started on Nishioka. I'll be here all day. Well, we talk a lot about the on this side because everybody asks us, you know, are these skills going to play in the majors? You know, you're in a unique position having played in so many different leagues and knowing that now Japan is a popular destination for a lot of players in AA and AAA in the Mexican League. Do you ever look at a player and think, boy, that guy's stuff will really play in Japan?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I tell guys that all the time. Especially when I was in winter ball the last couple of years, you know, there's so many hard throwers over there that come from that, Dominican and Venezuela as well. But at least I was seeing, I'm like, oh, here's a guy. I'm like, why couldn't, you know, this guy who's, you know, been stuck maybe even in AA or AAA or maybe a little bit of time, I'll see some arms. I'm like, oh, this guy should be able to go over to Asia and really do well. I look for, you know, plus fastballs because you don't see a lot of them. Mm-hmm. I think a good curveball, I think, I don't know if you guys agree with that or not, but I don't feel like you see nearly as many curveballs as you do. I'm almost like a DJ Holton type of guy with a good breaking ball. I sometimes think could be successful. I think Colin McHugh may be a guy that, you know, he's having a hard time sticking in the big leagues. He's got a really, really good curveball, pretty average fastball. Like, he could turn into a DJ Holton type. Yeah. If he gets a chance to go to Asia. I know he's still relatively young. He'll probably want to stay here for a little bit longer, but I look at those kind of guys with good curveballs, from a pitching standpoint, good velocity for relievers, you know, some kind of, you know, really good, maybe even that hard breaking ball. I know it's funny before I came over, my cutter for me was my fourth pitch.
Okay.
And when I got over there, they loved it and they wanted me to throw it all the time. And I think it was probably because we were still using the old balls then.
Right. Old balls. Smaller, I like that.
Yeah. The team to ones.
Talking about our old balls, man.
Yeah. But though, you know, in my cutter kind of all of a sudden became like my first or second pitch. If I let up a hit on any other pitch, they'd ask me why I didn't throw a cutter.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, so sometimes the repertoire changes a little bit too. So sometimes having that good hard slider is a good pitch to have over there. So I see that kind of stuff from pitchers, from position players. Look for guys that, for me, that can hit off-speed stuff for power.
Yeah,
I feel like that's something that translates well because you get pitched backwards so often there. And so it's not necessarily a guy who can hit, you know, a dead red pull fastball hitter. I don't think those are necessarily the best fits for Japan. It's more the guys that obviously can hit for a little bit of average, but also are good on off-speed pitches for power. So when I see some hitters that I think are good in that way, maybe a little bit slower bat, with some good power that's getting beat consistently here in the States on fastballs that are 93 to 96 and he can't get over the hump, I don't think he would see nearly as much of that over there.
Right.
And so if he has a little bit slower bat with power, and maybe still can hit for average, that might be a guy that would translate well for me.
Hmm.
Yeah. Another thing people ask us is, you know, the adjustments it takes to switch from one country to another. You know, as you were just alluding to, you know, people have different skills and so on and so forth, but there's so much of it that's not a skill. There's so much of it is communication and everything and the context being different. Let me ask, what do you think are, for a Japanese player, what are the chief adjustments or the chief hurdles they have to overcome going to the major leagues? Because, you know, we've seen certain kinds of players struggle, and I can't really, they're hard to generalize about.
Yeah, it can be tough. I think, you know, the biggest thing, and a lot of people have talked about it, but at least from a physical standpoint, the little bit of a change in the baseball, which it seems closer now. I've seen the new balls. I was actually playing catch with Jason Stamets the other day. He was here.
Uh-huh.
And I was like, okay, these aren't, you know, these are definitely closer and, you know, more similar. So
okay.
I think that adjustment isn't as big as it used to be.
Mm-hmm.
For guys, there's still a little bit of an adjustment, but it's not as bad. I think a big one is the mounds as far as how hard they are here. Right. I noticed it when I was especially pitching in the Yahoo Dome. That mound is so soft, or at least it was when I was there. I was like, wow. And what I did notice on the positive side of that was that I always had some knee issues on my landing knee over time. It was just, you know, starting to wear down. There'd be some pain there and a lot of inflammation. And that really went away when I was in Japan because the mounds were so soft.
Mm.
And so I think the reverse could happen for some guys that may not be used to it. Although I haven't heard too many guys complain once they got here, but that it's in the conversation of, wow, these mounds are really hard. They're so used to kind of hitting and sliding a little bit more. And so I think that's, you know, that can be a little bit of a big one. But I think by the end of spring training, they get it. It just takes a little bit of time, I think, to get comfortable. So that's an adjustment that they have to get over. You know, obviously the 5-man rotation is a big one, I think. But I really think for guys the biggest one for me, at least, obviously I haven't done it as a Japanese player coming here, but I think there's a really big mental adjustment. You guys know as well as anybody how they, you know, feel like they have to be the man. And I always tell people that in Japan, for me, it seems to be that it's more about quantity over quality as opposed to quality over quantity when you're doing your work. Especially in spring training, you know about the pitch count numbers and everything else. And I think that there's something to that. I think for Darvish, you know, that first time he comes out of a game where he's pitching pretty well, but he's got 110 pitches and he's only through 6 2/3 innings. The team's happy that he's leaving the game with a lead and gave a pretty good effort. He's probably not happy because he's like, oh man, I'm coming out of the game in the seventh inning where that would be, I think, looked down upon more in Japan than it would here. And so I think there's a mental component to that for them where they have to be willing to accept the fact that it's okay. That's not easy. I could sit there and say it all day long. Your manager and your pitching coach and your teammates would be like, no, you pitched good. Good job. But if you don't believe it, then you don't believe it. And that sometimes can carry over a little bit if you think that you're disappointing your team by not doing as much as you're used to doing when you're in Japan. I think for those times where you're like, yeah, okay, I'm at 120 pitches and I just finished the seventh inning. I'm going back out for the eighth and I'm going to try to finish this game. You know, or, you know, fight whatever, the pitch count gets up there where they're going to take you out. And I think maybe you feel like you disappointed your team. And that can weigh on a player, regardless of where you're playing. If you feel like you haven't done what you believe is, you know, what you should be doing for your team, even though we look at things so differently. And so I think that's one of the biggest ones. I think Tanaka, to some degree, will have to deal with that and be willing to accept that it's okay. That six innings, that one day where you didn't have your best stuff, but you still kept your team in the game and only threw six innings, they're okay with that. They're going to take their, you know, you're not going to get heavily criticized for that, at least not in your own clubhouse. And so I think for Japanese guys, I think that's a big part of it. And being okay with lowering your workload preseason. I mean, that's a big one. You guys know what they do. The pitch counts and the amount of pitches that they're throwing in spring training. And it's always like who threw the most pitches in their bullpen. Right. You know, that spring training or that day is kind of like a badge of honor. Where here we're like, no. I mean, no, absolutely not. You know, let's just be smart. You know, we're thinking long term here for Tanaka. We need you for 7 years or at least need 5 or 6 good ones out of you. For this kind of money, so that means we're going to back off a little bit. That may be hard for guys. Like, no, the way I prepare is I throw a 200 pitch bullpen 3 weeks before the season starts.
Yeah.
Well, Yankees are like, no chance you're doing that. You're not doing that.
It's hard.
So that's, I think that's a big adjustment.
Certainly it is. It is, to me, it's a monstrous adjustment because so much of, you know, as you know, so much of the game is preparation.
Mm-hmm.
Being mentally and physically prepared. And if you feel like you're not prepared because you didn't do what you've been doing since junior high school, that's gotta be a hurdle to get over.
Yeah, definitely. It was the same thing for me on the other way. You know, for me, my first spring training, luckily for me, our trainers, were good about it. And I'm saying, you know, I'm not going to run whatever. I mean, I'm exaggerating here, but I'm not going to run 7 miles today. That's for me at my age, at 34 years old, what I've learned by the time I had gotten there, that if I really want to keep pitching into my 30s, I actually have to really peel back my work because I want my body to last. And my bullpens are going to be a lot shorter if I throw them at all because I want to continue to pitch for 4 or 5 more years instead of just giving all that effort and knowing it's going to, you know, not going to end well for me. And they were good about it. They were good about letting me do it. And I watched the other relievers.
Right.
And I think to some degree they were a little bit envious. Because you know how it works in that bullpen where every reliever gets up.
Yeah.
Throwing a bullpen in the first inning. And the first couple, like probably the first week, I did not understand what was going on. And because I had gotten up in like the fourth inning, Saito had pitched opening day. And he was like throwing a no-hitter or something through 4 innings and they got me up. And I was like, what in the world? And so I got up and I threw a pen and then I had gotten up 4 times that game. And threw about 85 pitches and ended up not pitching in the game. And we had a meeting afterwards. And they asked me what I was doing. And I said, what do you mean what I'm doing? You called to get me up. I get hot or I get ready or I get close. And so they had to explain that whole system of, no, the first time you throw is just a throw. We're not actually getting you ready to go in the game. That's just part of your preparation. And I was like, no. I'm like, that makes no sense to me. You have to save your bullets. You know, I have only so many left in the tank. And I want them to be used out in that game.
Yeah.
I don't want to be wasting them in the bullpen. I mean, there's, you know, you're going to waste pitches in the bullpen. It happens. There's times you have to get up and you don't go in the game because the manager's not quite sure what he wants to do. But they kind of take it to a whole new level. And so the other pitchers in the bullpen, I can tell because they did it every day. They got up every single day, depending on your role. That was dependent on what time of the game. The long man was up in the first inning. The middle guys were up in the second or third. Setup guys would throw a bullpen in the sixth. It made absolutely no sense.
And every day.
And, yeah, every day. And those guys got jealous. There's no doubt that they were like, I'd much rather do that. Mahara started doing it. He did not throw unless it looked like there was a save situation. But everybody else would. And it always amazed me how much they did it.
I've talked with the number of pitchers about this. And very often it's like, no, we don't have to do it. But but do you do it? Yes, because I think it's necessary. And yeah. I don't know, and I, especially Yasuhiko Yabuta, the Marines, and I were talked a lot, and that was a story, you know. Oh, we don't have to do it, but I do it.
Yeah, it's crazy.
Nope. Yeah. Right.
All right, now, CJ, we want to let you go after these next couple questions. You touched on Masahiro Tanaka, and he's been the hottest thing since the internet was invented, so... what I want to know from you and get your opinion on is the defense that the Yankees are going to be putting behind him. They're going to have a shortstop who's almost 40 years old, a brand new catcher to the system. We don't really know what the defense behind him is going to look like. How do you think the defense in the stadium are going to impact his numbers?
Well, the stadium will impact him just like it does anybody else, because I believe, and again, I trust your opinion more than my own, but he's a little bit more of a fly ball pitcher. I don't think he's a traditional ground ball pitcher,
right?
If I'm not mistaken. But so, I mean, everybody gets affected pitching in Yankee Stadium, period. Doesn't matter who you are. And so if you're making half of your starts in that stadium, you'll see some home run numbers go up. That's almost a given, obviously, with the combination of the lineups as well. He's going to see in the American League East or even the American League overall. So that'll change a little bit. The Yankees have legitimate concerns about their defense. Now, Brian Roberts is who he's been in the past, and he's healthy. They'll have a solid second baseman. If, you know, what they're going to do at third, is it going to be, you know, Kelly Johnson? Are they going to mix guys in as they try to figure out who's going to be their opening day third baseman? Is Nunez going to be the guy? He's not particularly solid defensively, though. He's probably a better third baseman than he is a shortstop. And if Derek Jeter's going to be 40, what's his health status and what does he have left? I mean, you know, the sabermetrician crowd loves killing him in his defense.
They've torn him up for years.
Absolutely.
Even when he's good, they're saying he's not as good as everyone thinks he is.
They've torn a hole in his glove.
So, you know, I understand, which I think is, you know, to some degree, there's a legitimate criticism there. So the infield is shaky. Now, Mark Teixeira is a great first baseman.
If he's healthy.
Defensively, he's solid. If, again, but he has ifs. There's so many ifs surrounding the New York Yankees. Now, defensively in the outfield, they'll be really good. So that, you know, that's a plus. And regardless, even though Brian McCann's new to the Yankees, no matter who was there, Jorge Posada could be there. He's still new to Masahiro Tanaka. So that adjustment is the same, no matter what. So he'll have to deal with, with that. You know, Brian McCann is, I think Brian McCann's a little bit underrated, to be quite honest with you, as a catcher. I like him. He does a pretty good job, I think, because he has some offense to him. We sometimes make the assumption that he's not as good as we think, but he's certainly not a liability back there. And so, there'll be some issues there, without a doubt. But for him, you know, it's like anything. It's out of your control. And so you focus on only what you can control. You'll drive yourself crazy if you, I don't care who you are, if you're worried about things that are going on behind you, then there's nothing you can do about them. So, mentally you go out and you do what you can do. They're going to be a good team. They're going to be competitive. You know, I think if anything, all the factors, the one that may hurt a little bit, like we talked about, coming out of games earlier than he may be used to. I have some concerns about the back end of that bullpen.
Yeah.
And so, you know, the first couple of times that, you know, one of his wins, gets thrown away because the bullpen gives it away or something like that. Those are, and I know it's happened to him before in his career, but, you know, those are not fun, especially when he's going in. And I think almost every guy, whether they admit this or not, will do this. He's going to go into that situation and he really wants to prove his worth. He's going to want to come in. And again, for Japanese guys, we have a tendency to do that based on wins. So if he comes in and he pitches a good enough game, but the team loses the game, he leaves guys on base and they scored, the loss goes on him. That's going to get frustrating for him, no doubt. So I think the back of the bullpen is a legitimate concern just as much as the defense.
All right. So before we let you go, I just wanted to know, I think the revised posting system, in my opinion, and I think Jim agrees with me, was a complete failure in this particular sense. And Tanaka ends up with this overinflated contract. Do you think Major League Baseball failed here, and what do you think it failed with, and how would you change the system?
Yeah, I mean, I think that what they were going for, they didn't accomplish, because not only, you know, okay, so they thought we're gonna lower this to 20 because of, you know, for the prime players, this is getting out of control, and we want to give other teams a chance, which on paper is a nice idea to want to be able to get everybody else involved, but in reality, we saw what happened. If there was one of the big market teams that had a need, and listen, I don't even think the Dodgers had a need necessarily. Mm-hmm. They just had the money that says the once in a lifetime kind of guy, we're going to get in on this, even though we already have Greinke and Kershaw and Ryu. So, you know, the big market teams are still going to have the chance to win. Now it seems like the Diamondbacks had a chance. The Cubs had a chance to be involved, but not really.
Yeah.
You know, at the end of the day, not really. If one of the deeper pocket teams wanted him, they're going to get him. What I don't think they really took into account with what happened with Tanaka is, had he gone through the old system, and let's just say the Yankees were willing to go even up to 70, because it sounds like they were all in. So they did a posting fee for 70, and say a, you know, 6 or 7 year contract at $85 million, still bringing it to 155. His average annual value on that contract is significantly lower than what it is, right? Because his actual salary is only $85 million. Mm-hmm. So maybe his AAV is $12 million. Well, mm-hmm. that didn't happen. He goes in the other direction. So now his AAV is $24
million. Mm-hmm.
Well, other players can use that as a comp now.
Mm-hmm.
And so other salaries are going to go up. Other starting yep. pitcher salaries are going to go up. So not only did they kind of look foolish in the sense that the Yankees ended up getting the player anyway,
right.
but now other players are going to make more money and salaries are going to continue to rise because of that contract.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not just that it affected him and kept him away from other teams that maybe really didn't have a fair shot at getting him.
Right.
Now other guys are going to get paid, and so they're going to drive the market. So I didn't like this. I didn't like the change at all. I understood why the Eagles were upset about it. I think they were justifiably angry about it. At the same time, I don't know why the Japanese owners, or at least the other 11 teams, they didn't take a little bit of a stronger stand, because it almost seems like now, you know, Tanaka's a bargain at $20 million for a posting fee, and it's almost like MLB is kind of pillaging now in some sense, where they're taking the best products, or at least they can take the best products and not have to pay the full value to the team of what they're worth. So I don't like that part of it at all. It's not a perfect system. I don't know if there's a perfect answer how you do it to, you know, there's no way a guy like Tanaka is going to be available to all 30 teams. Right. They can't afford him. So there's got to be something. There's got to be a different way to do it. I didn't love this for the Eagles. I understand why they were upset. But at the end of the day, I'm happy for Japanese players, because they have now they have multiple teams to negotiate with. So for, if for some reason Tanaka just hated New York and his wife was like 100%, we're not going to New York, or you're going to be on your own. he didn't have to go there.
Right.
Where Iwakuma only had a chance to negotiate with the A's that year.
Correct.
Nishioka only goes to the Twins, you know, and so I love this for Japanese players. They are the huge winners in this, obviously. I don't necessarily love it for Japanese owners at all, and I don't think Major League Baseball really solved their problem.
Well, there was another option, which I'll make this really brief, because I know you're busy. And anyway, there was another option we discussed, which is, in fact, somebody in the U.S. pointed this out, that this system, where the is good for nobody, would likely lead the Japanese teams to just throwing the posting system out the window and just starting selling their players.
Yeah.
You know, and just negotiating transfer fees with the teams, and then you negotiate a contract with them, and everybody's Jake, which is to me, is the normal way to go about it. The team's
yeah.
happy, the player's happy, everybody's happy.
Yeah. Makes sense, because the blind bid stuff was nonsense.
Yeah.
And that just got out of control. It's like a huge mystery, and then, you know, a team ends up way overpaying. That to me makes a lot more sense. So you're interested in a player, let's talk about transfer fees, and you can sit there, if that team can talk about that player throughout the entire year, doesn't have to be made public while he's playing,
yeah.
and then come the end of the offseason and say, here's where we are. You know, everybody knows he's available. At least we're listening. You just let Major League Baseball teams know, hey, we're listening on, if I'm going to say it wrong, Maeda, the guy from Hiroshima?
Maeda.
Maeda. So, you know, as an example, using him as an example, we're listening on him. Come to us with our best transfer offer, your best offer, and then we'll decide when the season's over. You know, and go from there. But that takes it out of the player's hands, so I hate that part.
Well, he could still set. I mean, they could still set it up so, you know, all the parties have to agree.
Yeah, that could be part of it. Sure.
How much we'll release him for, and this is how, you know, and then he can negotiate a contract with you. He'll be kind of a free agent and kind of not.
Yeah.
If we're happy, he can go. If he's happy, he can go.
Yeah, I mean, if that could work, I certainly like that a lot better. Like you said, as long as those players can maintain that, because I think it's fair. I mean, I don't think it's fair. For these guys, this is their dream to come here. Their opportunity comes up. Their team's willing to post them, and you know the Kansas City Royals are the only team that you can go to. Sure. You're like, God, I really, Kansas City is not the right fit for me. Mm-hmm. You know, I just don't want to go play there where, you know, Americans that come over to Japan don't have that issue. So that part of it really seems unfair to me when you pigeonhole a guy who only gets a chance to play for one team.
All right. Well, we've done it. We've fixed the posting system. So hopefully they'll listen to us.
They should.
At least talk to somebody that other people listen to.
Yes. All right, CJ. Well, thank you very much for joining us. We really appreciate it, buddy.
My pleasure. Great catching up with you guys.
Good yeah, we look forward to, you know, hearing you on MLB.com, and we'll talk to you soon, I hope.
All right, sounds good. Yeah, I'm hoping to get – I'm trying to trick somebody into flying me over there at some point to do a story, so hopefully I will be over at some point next year, too.
We'll stir up something over here, you know, be news value for you.
Perfect. I'd appreciate that.
All right.
Okay, sure.
Thanks a lot.
All right, you guys take it easy.
All right.
You're welcome. Bye.
All right. Well, thank you, CJ, again. And it was such a great pleasure.
Yeah, CJ, thank you very much. We really enjoyed having you on and talking with you. And thank you for all the time, because I think in the emails that I was sending back to him in the communication before the chat, I said, you know, we probably talked to you about 15 minutes. And we went on for 30-plus minutes. So it was a little bit longer. Just a little bit longer. Yeah. You could do that without me.
Just put me in a room. Still
but, yeah, you know, the thing that I remember most about CJ is the one time that I got to go to the camp, when I got this gig here in Tokyo, I went and talked to Morimaki, who was subbing for Sadaharu Oh, who was having stomach surgery. Well, he was having his stomach removed, I think, and had been diagnosed with cancer, if I remember correctly. And I went down there to actually talk to him. And I sat through the game, and CJ and some other young pitchers came in. Actually, the press box was right behind home plate. And so CJ was back there. And the thing I remember two things about him is, number one, he had just come to Japan, obviously, but he was he was very diligent about trying to learn Japanese and trying to speak it with his teammates and trying to do his best to become one with the team. And wow. I thought that was really interesting. And then the other thing is, I was watching a broadcast later on that season in which I don't remember who the analyst was or the color commentator was for that particular game, but he says, you know, CJ doesn't throw very hard and he doesn't have great stuff, but he really battles, you know, he really battles and he doesn't give in. And I thought, oh, that's interesting, that these Japanese announcers would say something like that about a foreign pitcher, because a lot of times, usually they bring over power guys anyway.
Sure.
And CJ wasn't one of those guys. And he, like you said, he gave up base runners, you know, and, you know, he still fought out there. So, yeah, those were the two things I remember about CJ that year. And then I don't think we got to speak to him pretty much the rest of the season that particular year. That was his first year. So when he started working at MLB.com, I thought, oh, well, you know, I didn't know that he had such a great voice. You know, when we were sitting there talking to him the other day, I thought, well, here's another guy who he's got a fantastic voice. I'd really like to have that voice. Can you let me borrow it?
Yeah, that's what I said. Always said about Leon Lee. I asked him if he'd will it to me.
I still want Matt Winters.
No.
Yeah, Matt Winters. That's the voice I want.
All right.
That's the only one.
You got it.
All right,
you can have it.
Thanks. Thanks a lot. So yeah. With all that, what was the thing that stood out the most for you in the chat?
Well, a couple of things, and I think that we'll stick with the domestic side as opposed to the leaving Japan side.
Right.
And that was the talk about the bullpen. I know that caught your ear as well.
Mm.
Because I used to – I was intrigued by this. I've been intrigued by this issue of the Japanese pitchers relievers getting up and throwing pretty much every day. I was shocked the first time Brian Warren of the Chiba Lotte Marines told me about this back in, I guess, 2000. And I said, like, you're kidding. And no, they all do it. And except the guy who took his place as the Marines closer, Masahide Kobayashi. Now, their manager at the time told me, well, no, Kobayashi doesn't. They don't have to throw if they don't want to. Now, here's the thing.
Huh, huh, huh.
Everybody said
with the Marines, and I can only really speak for the Marines because I knew Yasuhiko Yabata,
mm-hmm.
and I knew Warren, and I knew, you know, the foreign relievers, and then later on I knew the manager, Bobby Valentine, and it was like they protected that secret, that who threw and who didn't throw was like a state secret. You know, I asked Yabata, does Kobayashi throw? Well, he does when he wants to. I don't want to say anything about him throwing. I said, well, do you throw? Well, yes, I have to because I'm not any good. I'm going like, yeah.
Yeah.
I asked Fujita, he used to wear the coolest sunglasses.
Oh, yeah, that's
no,
no, that's
a different one. No. Anyway, they had another a lefty by the name of Fujita. He always wore the coolest shades. I always complimented him on his eyewear. And I'd say, you know, do you throw every day? And he said, mm-hmm. So I'm like, tell me the truth. Somebody tell me the truth. And nobody would ever let on. So I got into that, and I heard they all throw. And if it's like most things in Japan, they are not required to throw, but they all do it as if by magic.
Hmm. Well, that gives you a little bit of insight to why they call it a bullpen, I guess.
Ooh, very, very astute, Mr. Gibson.
Well, I don't know. You know, yeah, that's the first thing that came to mind is like Japanese companies where nobody will leave before the department head or before the boss leaves because they want to act like they're working too. So I guess everybody, if one guy throws, then everybody has to throw down there just to show that they're tough as well.
They're going to get some practical joker, get up and start throwing and just like faking it. Like, I'm going to throw? No, I know. We'll watch people stand up and sit down.
Well, you know, the thing for me was when CJ said, yeah, when Kazumi Saito, who was, I guess, as a shutdown a guy as you could ever have on a Japanese mound, okay, and he's their ace, yep. And he's throwing a no-hitter, he says, and they have him get up in the fourth inning. I mean, if that's the case with your ace on the mound, what do you do with the last three guys in your rotation? Do you just warm somebody up right alongside of them at the beginning of the game?
Pretty much. I mean, yeah.
I can't imagine you trusting them in getting one out.
Yeah, well, here's the thing.
Oh, there's ball one. Get somebody up.
Of course, that's not the purpose of them pitching. It's the whole process is very the whole using, and it made me think of something kind of interesting, which was back in the 90s, and Hiroshi Gondo was the manager of the Yokohama Bay Stars when they won their second Japan Series championship, 1998.
98 is what I want to say, yeah.
And they had an interesting approach that year. They had a bullpen rotation. And what was meant by a bullpen rotation was instead of saying lefty, righty, lefty, you know, basing, keeping everything fluid and random, Gondo decided that the best way to use the bullpen was to just use the guys in order. So they all know,
just randomly.
You know, they all know when they're coming in and they all know I'm next. And there was no guessing. And you know what? These guys who were kind of meaty, they were kind of okay before that. He took a bunch of guys who really didn't have any business, you know, who looked like they had no business being in anybody's bullpen, and they looked like all-stars. Guys like Hideyuki Iwano and Kawamura, and I'm going like, these guys are not that good. They had a bunch of guys who weren't that good, but they were really effective in, he set up a system where these guys were effective because it was all prepared, it was all preparation, I suppose. I haven't asked him about that, but I ought to next time I see him.
Well,
will next
you know,
time
you always
him.
Get on me because I want to know, I want people to know what their roles are, and those guys obviously knew what their role was, and they prepared for it, and it made it easier, made life easier for them.
Caught a lot of flack from people because they're like, of course, Katsuya Nomura, we know who's coming in. Well, hey, Katsuya Nomura, I mean, you guys finished last that year, huh?
And you always rip on me for talking about roles and stuff like that, and then you bring up this great example.
I don't rip on you for bringing up
I'm
roles.
Sorry, what do you call it?
I call it putting it in perspective.
Oh!
It's one thing, and it works. It probably wasn't the only thing that was going on.
No, you
but
twist
like
the words and make them fit exactly. That's beautiful. I like that, putting it in perspective.
No,
yes.
I like players having defined roles, but I'm not a big on
And I understand that there are issues, there are mostly psychological issues, like, you know, who bats first in the batting order? It's like, yeah, who cares?
Yeah,
you know, I don't care because, you know, anybody can pick a leadoff hitter. This is not rocket scientist.
Well, I mean, I care
science,
because I think it doesn't really matter. Well, I think it's mental for the players, not necessarily for anything else.
Yeah.
Well, you know, I like the fact that CJ also gave a shout out to guys like Nagisa Arakaki, who he said probably had a good enough arm to go to the States. And I like what he said about Norichika Aoki.
Sure.
But I guess the part that really got to me, and I know got a rise out of you, is when he started talking about Minnesota and Tsuyoshi Nishioka not knowing where to go on cutoffs and that being a shocker and just the things that he said about him not getting the job done. The floor is yours.
Don't get started on me on Seahawks.
See, once you push that Nishioka button, there's no reverse on that thing. You can't skip forward.
I say it every week. Don't you just give me 5 minutes every week to rag on Nishioka?
It's Nishioka bashing time by Jim Allen.
No.
Starring Tsuyoshi Nishioka.
Yeah, what a great physical talent he has. But, you know, baseball is not all about physical talent. I mean, you gotta be motivated and prepared. And obviously my take on him was that he was often not motivated and sometimes, and CJ was saying that he wasn't prepared.
Yeah, which is kind of shocking, but. He probably wasn't prepared to play second base. That might be said, but he knew that there was a possibility, I think. So
yeah,
it's not that big a surprise.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So I don't want to go into too much venting on that. I do it all the time anyway. So I don't feel the need to let off any extra steam. I mean, the season hasn't even started yet.
You let off all the steam now. Yeah. What are you going to do later when you actually need the steam to vent?
I'll have some. Just all I got to see is one Tigers practice. Although, you know, like I said last year, when I asked him, some of his teammates about the useless infield practices and some of the silly things he does, he says it was really important for the Tigers that they have somebody who's kind of an oddball. Because the team is normally uptight.
Uptight, yeah. That's one wound up, tense, squeaky team right there.
Squeaky.
Yeah.
Okay, that did get me, and I didn't even got started on him, but interestingly enough, of course, I thought, you know, I've always thought, you know, if Nishioka was applied himself, I don't think he can, to be honest. I really, you know, he's one of these guys who rises when he thinks the occasion's worth his trouble. Kiyohara was a guy like that. And I don't want to start castigating players.
Sure you do.
I do, but I don't, you know.
We don't have time, that's all.
No, exactly. Nobody wants to listen to it. So anyway, that did get me. So the transition to the majors can be very hard. It was harder than Nishioka thought it was going to be. And he just, you know, it's like he skipped a couple of classes and couldn't catch up.
Yeah.
So that would, anyway. Moving along, one of the things that caught me, speaking of the transition to the majors, was him, something that really hadn't occurred to me before. Actually, he said a lot of things that hadn't occurred to me before, which is why I loved the chat. Was this, from my point of view, kind of a pseudo-psychological challenge of the, and I say that in my analysis, not in CJ's, but the idea that you have to go out there. I can see how the idea of a Japanese starting pitcher, especially a big stud starting pitcher like Darvish and Tanaka and Matsuzaka, especially those three guys, not being able to finish games for one reason or the other.
Right, and remember we talked about Darvish having not given the ball to the manager in the middle of an inning at any time the season before he left to the States. And I think Michael Westbay looked it up and found that he hadn't done, or he had maybe done it one time the season before that. So the thing that really caught my eye with him last year was him actually handing the ball to the manager and walking off the mound during games, because that's something we hadn't seen. So I think, I know where you're going with this story here.
So, well, anyway, it hadn't occurred to me really. I mean, I thought it might be a small thing, but on the other hand, if you've got that, if you've got the mentality, if you can't escape the mentality that you're failing, you know, that sets you up, it sets you up for things to fail when they're not.
Yeah, it feels like you're, fear of failing. You're not failing, but you feel like you're failing.
Exactly. So all of a sudden, how come I'm not getting the job that you start questioning? You know, this reminds me so much of the problem that foreign hitters have coming to Japan and dealing with the ethereal strike zone.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they don't know what are strikes because it changes so much from day to day and from umpire to umpire and from pitcher to pitcher. And,
right.
And you know, in this inning it's this and that inning it's that. And you just have to, you know, hit the pitches you can hit, lay off the pitches you can't hit, and try to adjust to those. So you can't be worrying about it. If you start worrying, trying to adapt and become a different player, you're lost.
Yeah, I once heard somebody talk, I think it was a football broadcast I was watching, and John Madden said that he heard a quote from somebody, and the quote was, don't let good enough be good enough. You know, try to work harder. But I think in the case of Darvish and Tanaka, good enough has to be good enough sometimes.
We're not talking about Alexander Goodenough, yeah? The ballet dancer? Okay, just checking. Okay.
Leave it to Jim.
I didn't really think it, you had to think of like former Bolshoi ballet dancers.
Yeah, leave it to Jim to throw us a gyro ball when we were expecting a fastball and cross us up with a good enough.
Had to be a witness to that. Okay.
So yeah, I mean, they've got to be able to say, accept good enough, not excellent. And then go on to the next game.
Sort of almost like a closer mentality. You know, regardless of you have to do that in Japan regardless as well. But the problem is that the standards are different.
Mm.
So that hadn't occurred to me. So I was thinking about that and I was thinking, you know, this could be a part of Matsuzaka's when Matsuzaka suddenly turned on the Red Sox and said, the reason I can't succeed is because you won't let me throw as many pitches in the spring as I like. And the reason I'm not in condition is because it's your fault. And I started thinking, well, he was pitching well, and all of a sudden he's not. And, of course, what was really happening was he was injured, and it wasn't confirmed until later on. But here he is spouting off and making all kind of noise. And you would never expect that out of Tanaka. You would expect that more out of, you know, Irabu. Irabu was into those ones. You know, when he couldn't adjust, it was somebody else's fault. And I shouldn't pick on Irabu because I don't know the details, but he got into nasty, unwinnable battles that didn't have to happen. He got isolated and so on and so forth. And Matsuzaka, I don't think he's not, you know, they're different individuals, but yeah, anyway, so he had a problem. He had issues with the way he was used and he didn't make those adjustments. I think now, speaking of Matsuzaka, I feel kind of unfortunate that he's one of seven pitchers looking for a fifth of the rotation spot.
Yeah.
But he's one of three pitchers battling for one spot because I think he can get the job done. I know Terry Collins with the Mets is going to give him a chance.
Yeah. Well, good luck to him. And we talk about another New York pitcher now. All
okay, right. So Wednesday night about midnight in Japan,
mm-hmm.
The news started breaking that Tanaka was signed with the New York Yankees, had agreed, come to terms with the New York Yankees on a contract that was worth a couple
of pretty pennies. And wow. I wasn't surprised. You know, I was surprised how it went down in terms of me. I have this ESPN application and it shot over a little alert. And then I turned ESPN on my computer. Mm-hmm. And I started watching and they started making live reports. And then I had the TV on in Japan here, of course, and I kept flipping from news station to news station, which they were on live at the moment at the time, and they weren't reporting it. And I'm like, what the heck's going on here? Why is the U.S. reporting it first and Japan's lagging behind? But, I probably was his agent who let the news out over there and then contacted him, it might have been the reverse. I was imagining it would be him who tweeted it out or something, and then, or they would do
well,
it at the same time.
It was, you know, what you're saying is true. This was a negotiation unlike any other. Pretty much everything from the day he was posted in this new posting system till today has never been done before.
Yeah, that's sure to be said for a long time. I don't even know that any of the pitchers coming behind him, save for maybe if Shohei Ohtani develops into something really great, will get anything close to what he's getting. So this is going to be the richest rookie contract in history.
Well, I'd say for the time being, because the markets, you know, you don't know what the market's going to be.
Yeah.
You don't know how much money is going to be available. But that was another thing that CJ said, which hadn't occurred to me. You know, it moves that annual average salary for starting pitchers. Mm. It skyrockets it, because what they do in the majors, the big deal is when you're negotiating, not I think as much when you're negotiating a free agent deal, but when you're negotiating arbitration figures, when you're exchanging arbitration numbers and you go to arbitration with a team, basically the team says you are a comparable player to A, B, and C.
This is
what they're paying you. This is what we're going to pay you. They're getting paid, and this is what you're going to get paid. They have the same service time. Their numbers are blah, blah, blah.
Right, right.
And your agent will say, no, we think he's comparable to X, Y, and Z. And that's why we think this money is. And the arbitrator chooses A or B. He doesn't split the difference. So this idea of comparable salaries is extremely important in arbitration and salary negotiations in America. So Tanaka really raised Tanaka and his agent Casey Close, who had the slam dunk week of a lifetime.
Yeah,
you know, with the Clayton Kershaw and then Tanaka. Man, it was like he should have been in Vegas, but they wouldn't have paid him as much.
I was gonna say you can't hit a jackpot like that in Vegas twice. Another thing was that, and obviously I thought it was going to go over $125 million. I think that was my conservative
estimate. Well, you were
thinking
estimate. 6 years, $120 million, yeah?
Yeah, somewhere around there. So, for it to be $155 million was kind of a big surprise. Josh Whitesell chimed in on the Facebook page, and he said, you know, the ability for them, meaning Tanaka and his agent, to negotiate with multiple teams was the big deal. And
sure.
Obviously, I asked CJ, what's the deal with the posting system? Is it broken? Is it ridiculous? And he said, hey, look, I noticed that you held your tongue at that point, but obviously, you know, these teams couldn't save themselves. They couldn't stop themselves again.
And they
end up overpaying, but you know, we don't know what the other offers were.
Well, first of all, I think what you're saying is wrong. They're not overpaying.
Well, everybody said they overpaid. Everybody said
they overpaid, but nobody overpays. They had to pay. They're overpaying, and I'll classify or I'll
concede.
No, what I'll say is I'll,
never.
Never give up. Never surrender.
Never succeed.
Okay, I will, clarify what I'm saying. Now, do I think they overpaid? In this market, they did not overpay. They paid what he was worth in this market.
Well, we don't know what he's worth yet.
No, we know what he's worth in this market because he just got paid. You know, he just put his pen on the contract. That's what he's worth. It don't matter what you think he's worth or what he does eventually. What he's worth right now is what he got paid. Now, that's going to change, but right now that's his value.
Right now. All right.
Okay. Now, you know, there's a cost out there. That's what he's worth. If another team wanted him, right, you know, they could have paid it and they could have got him. But they didn't want him as much as the Yankees. Now, here's the thing. The Yankees' needs were different. The Yankees' resources were different. That created the market. Now, I was thinking about this, and I think you can say he overpaid in the sense that, let's say, you have to buy a house this year, and it's a lousy market to buy a house. Everything's inflated, the not good properties on the market, but you have to buy a house. And when you buy that house, because you need it this year and let's say next year and the year after, and the market dips 3 years later, when the market changes, the value of your house is going to change.
Dude, man, I don't know why you bring up these examples, man.
But I'm saying,
and it's not a house. It's this house. That's the thing. It's not a house. It's that they wanted this house. And no, whatever the market is, inflated or what, they wanted this house. So it's not about a house.
Yes. But the reason, why didn't the Red Sox buy them? Because they didn't need them.
Well, because they didn't need that house. Or they didn't want that house. Or they didn't want to pay that much for that house.
Exactly. They didn't need it as badly as the Yankees needed it.
And I agree.
Okay, so the point is, and what I'm saying is not, what I'm saying, if you would let me finish, is the...
See how it feels, huh?
Yeah, I do. So what I'm saying is that the market's always changing. They needed it this year when the value was very high. And if there's a lot of pitchers on the market next year, nobody's going to get a contract like that. However, people aren't going to get contracts like that next year. Every year it's a little different. If it was 2 years ago, it would have been a different market. Did they keep themselves from overpaying? No, they paid, in the old posting system, teams had to pay a market price for the posting bid. And then they got exclusive rights and they didn't have to pay top dollar to the pitcher because his choice was either take the money or go back to Japan.
Right.
Okay, so basically they have shafted the Japanese team by eliminating that market, but now they've opened up a bigger can of worms, which was an open bidding process between every team that wants to pay the price.
Plus, so those Japanese teams, like I said before, I suggested before, that these Japanese teams are not going to want to give up these players, and they're going to cite the fact that they don't get very much money to do it.
Yeah, I still think, having seen the Tanaka, how the Tanaka bid worked, I think seriously he may be the only player ever posted under that system.
Yeah, I get the point too.
That by this summer the major leagues will be saying, okay, we don't want the system no more, and Japan's going to go, okay.
Okay, yeah, good. Stay okay, the hell out.
but as far as they're paid him, they overpaid. Nobody held a gun to their head. They paid the market value. That was the market value for Masahiro Tanaka.
They were holding the gun to their own heads, okay? They had a bad team, and they needed pitching, and they think. I mean, Brian Cashman was glowing, one or the other, or both, after this decision thing. And, I mean, obviously they're happy that they got him, but probably there won't be a Steinbrenner running around calling him a fat pussy toad anytime soon, like what happened to Hideki Itami.
Hank is a pretty obnoxious character. Although, if Randy Levine, if you're listening, I didn't say that because I know what you're like when you get crossed. I have to take out insurance. Man.
Yeah, but I think he's going to be successful. I'm not sure that he's going to be able to live up to that contract. And even his former teammates were saying, the money was incredible. That was the one thing that I saw was a running theme among his former Eagles teammates, that they kept saying, that contract, the money is pretty impressive. So, yeah, who does care? I mean, it's not about the money. It's about the wins,
Yeah, I mean, I had, of course, when that came out, somebody was going, and Darvish is so much of a better pitcher. The system was different.
Yeah.
If it had been Darvish this year instead of Tanaka, it would have been exactly the other way around. Darvish couldn't negotiate. He didn't have a free market to negotiate. So, that's the way it works. So they set up that system and Tanaka came along. Now, here's the other question. Somebody asked me, how much, if Tanaka was worth $155 million, how much would Kenta Maeda been worth? And I think that if Tanaka had been Maeda instead of Tanaka, it wouldn't, he didn't go 24-0, but I'll bet he would have gotten a contract over $100 million. Just because he was he would have been the best pitcher on the market.
Right.
And that's all that mattered.
Yeah. All right. Well, the Yankees, it'll be hard watching him put on that uniform and pitch every 5 days. And we'll see a lot of Yankees. I saw somebody on Twitter. Was it you who said the Yankees wanted to buy 100% NHK wanted to buy 100% of, of the Yankees broadcast, and
they only got
60%.
60%. Yeah, I joke. Well, I made a joke about NHK's chairman's political stance. So
it was all good. It was all funny.
Okay.
I laughed. I know that. So, you know, we'll get a lot of his games. We'll see him every outing will be scrutinized. And I did see Claudio, in Toronto, our friend and
yep.
colleague, who said, he didn't think that Tanaka made the right decision to go to the Yankees. Too much pressure, too big a stage. But it doesn't matter. You know, even if this first season, just like when we had Jerry Krasnick on the show, he said it doesn't really matter what he does this first season. It's all about the career. And we can't judge him on one star. Although I did take the liberty of looking up the schedule, and I know they're going to start. If he pitches third in the rotation, he's going to pitch at the Astros, who Yu Darvish nearly no hit once and threw another one hitter or something against last year. Anyway, they're going to be. I'd like to see him start on the road in Houston. I think that's a good place for him.
Yeah. Well, we'll see. I don't worry about it too much. You know, people, again, this whole thing about the money and he's not worth it. And the fact is, you know, he can't possibly, and Keith Olbermann's rant the other day about how the Yankees are so stupid by signing Japanese pitchers. But, you know, that's just Keith Olbermann being Keith Olbermann. He can't be a reasonable person. You know, he's got to be extreme. So, the fact is he's a good pitcher. You know, how good he's going to be in the majors, simply remains to be seen. A lot of scouts say Darvish is a better pitcher. Not all scouts think that, but a lot of scouts do. You know, it's just going to be a wait and see. I mean, it doesn't really matter. There's nothing we can say right now that's going to make him a better pitcher. Or, you know, it doesn't matter if I think he's overpaid or underpaid, or, I mean, people thought Darvish was overpaid. I mean, just remember the comments about Tanaka's salary are really no different than the comments about Ichiro's posting fee. When people thought $13 million for a posting fee for a guy who'd never played in the majors was almost an insult to the major leagues. It was an insult to major leaguers.
Mm.
So, and I think that's very much the response we're getting with Tanaka. It's an insult to major leaguers that some guy who's never played there. This happens a lot whenever a player from Japan gets a big contract. There's some corner of outrage. You know, I've been here. You know, you get the same outrage when a veteran major leaguer loses his job to a guy, you know, a 22-year-old who's never done anything in the major leagues. Although, you know, he's lit up the Texas League.
Right. Yeah.
And he's like, well, he's never been in the show. How can this be happening?
How can this guy put on a show when he's never been in the show?
And it happened with Jackie Robinson.
Yeah.
There were people who wanted to get rid of him because, you know, it didn't fit their program.
Right.
So,
well, we know he's going to do okay, and we'll be watching. We'll be watching, of course, because that's all NHK will be showing. Let's go ahead and talk about Coco Ballantyne to wrap things up here now.
Anyway,
yeah, he was arrested earlier this month in Florida for domestic violence charges, false imprisonment charges. He's got bailed. He made bail. He's released. He's cleared to travel to Japan. He's here. He arrived on Tuesday. He held a press conference on Wednesday. He's going to have to return in May for divorce settlement and such proceedings like that. I just want to preface my comments by saying, hey, obviously he's innocent until proven guilty in a court of law.
Unless we don't like him.
Well, yeah, that's the way the process works.
If it's Tsuyoshi Nishioka, he's guilty.
In your eyes. And
I'm joking.
Yeah. I mean, you know, it looks like the team isn't going to sit him or anything. It looks like they're not going to give him any kind of, you know, I mean, like I said, he's innocent until proven guilty. I'm just thinking that the team could make a statement and say, hey, look, to its male fans and to its female fans and say, hey, look, we understand that he did something that was probably inappropriate. We don't know exactly what it was. We'll never know what happened inside the house. We know that he's charged with false imprisonment, which
yep.
is a big thing. So let's just make a statement and say, hey, look, we're glad you're here, but we're going to sit you down and say, hey, look, you know, I don't know if he's going to have to do PSAs. I'm not even suggesting that he do PSAs or anything like that, but show that, you know, they have some sensitivity to the female audience and that he has that sensitivity as well. And then even if it's just a game, and then, you know, you've addressed it, he plays. He might not even be ready to play opening day anyway because he missed some training. He admittedly missed some training while he was back home.
Oh, yeah, I don't think he missed that much, but yeah.
I don't think he missed that much either.
Think he was doing that much, to be honest. But again, you know, as he said, I got a whole of February to get ready for March and then another month to get ready for opening day.
Yeah, well, I'm still worried about him. I mean, not to really put him on the pedestal or to compare him directly to Tiger Woods, but Tiger Woods went through this divorce thing. That's a very public divorce situation.
True.
And it really wrecked his game. And it's just something to consider that maybe things won't go so smoothly with him because he's got so much on his mind. It's hard to concentrate. It's hard to stay focused. But again, I was told by one of the reporters who followed the Yakult Swallows last season that his wife never made a trip out here last year. So he did all this stuff with hitting the home runs, chasing the home run record on his own. And then his mother showed up that last week, mm-hmm. and it was no family member, no wife, no child. They weren't out here last season, so it might not bother him at all. It might not even be a situation for him at all, but it's something to think about, something to consider.
Yeah, you know, and again, this is another thing, like Masahiro Tanaka, we don't know how it's going to play out until it does. You know, there's not a lot of precedent for it. Divorces, I said before, divorces do funny things, they do painful things to people.
Yeah.
You do things that you can't ever imagine doing, and you get twisted, and it leaves a mark. And he wouldn't be human if it didn't leave a mark on him.
Right.
And he's going to try to – the team said, well, we want you to – you know, I said before, their attitude has not changed. We want you to act like a gentleman and hit and, you know, win ball games for us.
Yeah.
And, again, if he was a scrub who caused this much trouble – he would now be looking for work in Korea.
Yeah, he'd have to get a new name. But, you know, maybe they look at it as they know he's going through a lot. I mean, you know, most all of the guys who are on the team this year were there last year and saw him go through the home run chase and everything on his own. So they know what to do and what buttons to push to get him settled down and settled in and motivated to play and focus on baseball. And that's what they need him for. They don't need him for anything. They don't need to be friends with him per se, but I'm sure they want to, and they want to make life comfortable for him.
Sure. Well, I mean, you know, they got to cooperate. I mean, that's what it's all about, is cooperating on the field to get the job done. And the way they do it in Japan is, I don't want to generalize things, speak out of turn on things I don't know about, but because I don't know the pressures that are going on within the team. But, you know, they finished last year, and, you know, they've got to make an improvement in there. He said he wants to have a better season, to which the Tokyo Chunichi Shimbun wrote, he said he's going to hit more than 60 home runs, when that's not what he said.
Yeah, in fact, he said later in the press conference, I know you were there, I got a tape of it, that he said that it may be he's not going to hit 60 home runs.
Yeah, he says it doesn't mean I'm going to hit 60 home runs again.
He can have a better season. He can be more consistent. He can have a higher on-base percentage. He can play better defensively.
Yeah, which may be at first base.
As Junji Ogawa mentioned.
I don't really have too much to add. I'll tell you a little bit about the press conference. The Swallows team president bowed severely, and then he bowed severely, and the first thing he said, Valentin comes out and said, the first thing I want to say is hi.
Yeah, I just noticed that. Hi, and thank you all for coming here today. Like, we wouldn't be there if we...
And I talked to him after, you know, his way out the door. He's, we talked a second, but he looked the same. He looked, but I will say that, I don't know if I said this last week, but he's the, I think, to be honest, he set a record this year too. He's already said it. He hit 60 home runs last year. Nobody's ever done that before. And I think he's done something that nobody else has ever done in Japanese baseball. I think Vladimir Valentin, when he said, I'm glad to be here for the start of camp, he was the only veteran foreign player who ever said that without holding his breath or crossing his fingers.
Yeah, for a camp.
He was really glad to be here
to start a camp. Yeah, for a camp that starts on February 1st.
For winter camp.
Winter camp, baby. Which is open and going as you guys listen. So if you have any questions, please email them to yakyujohn@gmail.com. Or you can also go to the Facebook page like Claudio in Toronto does a lot. Thanks a lot, Claudio. Leave us a comment there and look for us on iTunes. And we'll see you in a couple of weeks. Enjoy your spring training.